This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play via the iHeartRadio app.
Yeah, it was awesome. 3,800, it felt like almost a sellout building to me. It was awesome. You could feel the energy. You could feel the excitement, having people back and their excitement being around the team again. And
yeah, for sure, that was different feeling. Much better with the fans, especially here in Tampa, because our fans are one of the best in the league. So that was for sure different. And I think everybody was really happy for that. We could have at least a couple thousand fans here.
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, just having fans in general was great. It felt like there were a lot more fans than the number that they said were in attendance. They were pretty loud.
It's been over a year since we had fans, so that was, you know, we played on the road, but to do it at home, it's very special. You know, this game is a lot better with fans in the stands.
It felt pretty good, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, anytime you get to play in front of your home fans, you definitely get a boost.
All right, I get where Steve wants us to go here to start the show. We're going to talk about raising the banner.
You think?
Great job. Great job.
That was not one press session.
A lot.
That was over like 2 or 3 days.
That was amazing. That was very good. You know, it was interesting.
That would have been impressive, though, if the Lightning had trotted out like 6 players and John Cooper after the game on Saturday.
But by the way, John Cooper, I felt like was in rare form post-game. He was giggling, he was cracking jokes, and he wasn't as disgusted with some of the questions as he sometimes can be.
Do you think disgusted? I
maybe
if
annoyed.
He gets disgusted, I think he hides it pretty well. I think he's pretty annoyed? Level with yeah. with questions.
I think it's a little tougher too with the way they're doing the press conferences as well. Sometimes there's glitches, and you know, coaches. They, especially after a loss, which obviously that didn't happen on Saturday, but they get the same questions over and over again. I understand that. It's part of your job. I will say this to the reporters out there, and I haven't heard it as much, although when Julian did talk a couple of days ago for his midseason assessment, let's stop with the thanks for doing this. That's their job.
That is a bugaboo with yours. Of yours.
Hey, thanks for doing this. No. Let them do it. That's what they're supposed to do. You ask the question. I mean, whatever. Pet peeve of mine, folks. So if you hear a reporter say that.
Maybe if you go on and you ask a question, you can start it with, by the way, I'm not thanking you for doing this.
By the way, guys, you're getting paid millions of dollars. You will do this, and you will answer my question. And that's just how we're going to start it. What I took from, and happy Monday, everybody. It is Power Lunch. He is Dave Michigan. I'm Greg.
And early game day, too.
And early game
4
day.
4 o'clock.
That's right. So make sure you get your lunch. You know, I actually said to my wife today when we were getting ready to come on and do the show, I said, I wonder how many of the 3,800 people will be in attendance today. Because, you know, it's not a holiday, right?
Right.
So most people will probably be working in some capacity, whether it's from your home or
yeah,
whether
that's
it's
an interesting question.
Going to the building. And I thought to myself, will it be a, because I guess we can say a packed house right now is 3,800. Will 3,800, would all of you be in attendance? So we tweeted that out today. Did you attend Saturday's game and tell us your experience? And are you going to the game today? 4 o'clock.
So,
I think that'll be interesting.
So I think, and we're going to find out at 4 o'clock. And it'll probably be announced 3,800 because that's tickets distributed, sold, etc. So I think that the people who committed to going to this game are going to go to the game. And the reason I think that is, so the game was switched. This was originally a 7 o'clock game.
Yeah.
The reason it's 4 o'clock is one of the postponed Lightning and Dallas games got rescheduled for tomorrow. And the league basically did the Lightning a solid and said, you have to travel after the game. We've got you playing at 7:30 Central Time on Tuesday, 8:30 Eastern. But that's only an hour that you're gaining traveling to Dallas. So we're going to have you play at 4 o'clock so you can get into Dallas at a reasonable hour. And in addition to a lot of the talk of appreciating the fans and the difference the fans made being in the building on Saturday, what I heard a lot from players and John Cooper was the benefit of actually getting into Dallas probably local time, maybe about 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
And so they're going to get to bed at a reasonable hour. That is why the game has been moved up today. So let's say the Lightning have been taking their full attendance, quote-unquote full attendance, from the start of the year, the 3,800. It's possible people would have committed to going to this game when it was still a 7 o'clock game. And it, look, it's going to say on your mobile ticket that it's at 4. It's not like people are going to be confused. I hope not, certainly. They understand the game is now in the afternoon. But my point, Greg, is that because the Lightning didn't have fans at the beginning of the season,
yeah,
I'm not sure exactly how it worked. I did see a comment from a fan who went with a friend on Saturday and said, yeah, we've had this game. We had this game from the start of the year. And so we had the seats in hand, basically.
Right.
And we decided to go when they opened it up. And it just happened to be the banner-raising game, which they were very happy about. But I kind of think that because you almost had a refresh, and now these seats are available for the Monday game, I'm wondering how many people – maybe I'm wrong on this. Maybe the people who are coming today have had these seats from the start of the year – and just didn't know if they'd be able to go, and it turns out they are. I guess I you know where I'm going with this? I think that the people who have committed to go to this game have committed more recently. So they knew that they were able to go. They knew it was 4 o'clock. The game had already been changed. But I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah, and let us know at Bolts Radio. Please do. What I was going to say, when I heard John Cooper talk about raising the banner, out of everybody who talked about that pregame, His analysis or his take on it is the one that struck me the most. He was a little emotional, Dave. I mean, it for him, yeah. He did talk about it just brought back all those memories. And
a marker in history, kind of.
Yeah. And he basically said, and I'm paraphrasing a bit, is that, you know, that banner is going to be here forever. Even when I'm gone and the players are gone, that's going to be up there forever. And, you know, sometimes you want to take a step back and be in the moment, but you also realize that, you know, you made some history, and it's bigger than just you. It's something for the whole city, for the franchise. And I it was good to see, because I think sometimes in today's sports world we live in, where social media can capture the emotion of a player positively or negatively, I think John Cooper had a very honest moment after the game, and I think that was nice to see.
Well, he's coached a number of games in Montreal, and if you've ever been in that building, the Bell Center, before that the Forum, you look up at the rafters and you see all of the banners there for championships and for players who have had their numbers retired, and you think about when he says still around, I mean, he might be referring to being the Lightning head coach. He might also be referring to actually being on this earth. And you look at the numbers, yeah, of the players who have been honored and feted, and their number has been retired, and how many of them are no longer with us.
Yep.
And the banners are still there. I mean, that's not lost on him. The same as in Boston, you know?
Sure.
With Phil and I were talking actually before Saturday's game, and I asked him, and again, we have so many conversations, I can't remember if this was on air or off air.
I know.
Maybe you remember, but I was asking him if he had ever been in a management position when they had to kind of figure out how to get a banner up so that it's up, but you're not blocking anyone's view, which is what I was thinking about when they moved the banner up. Even though there were only 3,800 fans, it wasn't 19,000, but they have to put the banner in a spot where it's not going to block anyone's view. And they have other banners up. And he said he had done one, but he said, yeah, the banners that went up in Boston, I was a player, and you know, I didn't really care about that. I wasn't thinking about that. But you think about the banners in the old Boston Garden. Now, the Bruins have not won as many championships as the Celtics, but they have both teams represented there, and both teams have had lots of player numbers retired, including Phil's, and they've moved all of that to the new building. But that's another one. You know, when John Cooper is coaching in Boston, he can look up and see the banners of championship teams from, you know, at least with the Celtics, you're talking about, you know, the 50s, the 60s. The Bruins won a couple of cups in the 70s. They had won some cups in the earlier days of the NHL, and then they won another one in 2011, obviously, the more recent one. But you take that in, and now there's a banner up in Amalie Arena that he had a very big part of, you know, winning that championship and getting that banner to the rafters.
Well, you know what? That's a good segue, speaking of banners, because let's face it, whether you agree with it or not, legacies are oftentimes dictated by how many championships you win as an individual or as a franchise. To be considered one of the best franchises out there, it's good to have those banners backing it up. The Lightning validated their tremendous core group of players and the way they've done things over the last 5 or 6 years by winning that Stanley Cup last year. And they're poised to make another run this year. And the reason they're poised to make another run, guys, is because they have a tremendous team, a lot of experience. But they're also, as Julien Brisebois said a couple of days ago, Dave, probably going to be bringing in the best player at the right time compared to anybody else who's going to make trades in the league to bolster their team in Nikita Kucherov. And boy, was there a firestorm a couple of days ago. I was going to say another word, but it's family friendly.
Yeah, I know. I may have used that word. I saw Eric Rulinson in the common area in the press box in between periods, and I said,
Eric,
boy, you stuck your toe in the beehive or something, didn't you?
Listen, this is where I tell you Twitter's a cesspool. And, you know, somebody getting off topic for 1 second, when you think about it, where in life in general do you wake up and possibly get ready to engage in an argument with somebody you've never met? That's exactly what Twitter is. Because
the platform helps facilitate
it
that.
It does.
For all of the good things that we've talked about.
Yes.
In terms of information dissemination quickly.
Which is great.
And yeah, it is.
Which is
great.
But think about it though, Dave. Just taking it a step back. Especially if you're one of those people who get into it, you're not going to back down. And he certainly mixes it up on Twitter, and
he does.
He likes to get, and some of that is part of engagement. But when you just separate Twitter for a second, I mean, how many times are you engaging in a debate with somebody you've never met, and you're really going at them? I find that sometimes funny when I watch people interact with one another that they've never met about a topic. That being said, boy, was there a firestorm when it came to Nikita Kucherov and the news that he was skating with the team. There were a lot of people. And you know what? Dave, there were a couple of people from my hometown that were starting to weigh in, media members, about, oh, the league needs to look into this. Nikita Kucherov back playing. And obviously, they got that story completely wrong. But it was just amazing how that took off, that Kucherov is skating, and somehow Tampa Bay was taking advantage of the situation, and they knew about this. And I mean, I was flabbergasted, but maybe I shouldn't be surprised.
All right, so I have a few thoughts on this, and we agreed beforehand we're not going to spend the whole show on this, but
it's
I do 45
think 5 minutes.
Okay. So my comment about this is unrelated to the Kucherov story, but you brought up the, I don't even know the word, the weird element of getting into an argument on social media with somebody that you don't know. I actually think that is in a way more likely to happen, because if it is somebody that you do know, assuming you have some level of respect for that person,
correct,
you are less likely to, how did you put it, get down into the sewer? I forget how you put
it. Yeah, whatever.
But when you don't know the person.
Yeah.
And to an extent, you're not completely anonymous, but you're anonymous from the standpoint that you don't have to see that person face to face and have an ongoing relationship with that person. I think in some ways it breeds this more readily. So I actually take the opposite tack. I think that if it is somebody that you know and you respect and you can understand their point of view, or maybe because you know and respect them, it becomes easier to understand somebody else's point of view. Or if you think that point of view is ridiculous, you approach it in a more respectful way because you actually like and respect that other person as opposed to a complete stranger. So that's where I come down on that. So the Kucherov story has two elements to it. One of which I think is a fair question, one that we have kind of posed not exactly in the same exactly the same way, but we've posed it kind of as a first cousin to the point, and I'm going to bring that up. The other part is, in my opinion, completely ridiculous, and ridiculous to the point that I don't even understand what the argument is. So the part that is ridiculous is this notion that before the season, the Lightning somehow convinced one of the top players in the league to undergo an extensive invasive surgery that will require months and months of rehab so that they could be cap compliant and not have to move any other players. And because they knew they would get him back in the playoffs, that it would be fine. Because, of course, they were going to make the playoffs without Nikita Kucherov. That just sounds ridiculous to me. I mean, in no way would anything like that ever happen. And if Kucherov didn't need the surgery, he would just say, no, I'm not going to. Why would he get the surgery if he didn't need it? Now, are they saying that he needed the surgery in October and they waited until the start of the year? From what we understand, he was trying to, first of all, he started noticing it in December. And then they tried to handle it with treatment, which is very consistent with what we've seen with other players. Steven Stamkos last year, originally when he started not feeling right, I'm talking about during the regular season, they tried to address it with treatment. They don't go to surgery right away. You try and solve the problem without having surgery. Because you know what can happen in a surgery? It might not go completely as expected. Just ask Ryan
Bad
Callahan.
Bad things can happen. Bad things can happen when you
Ryan
go
Callahan,
the
Ryan Callahan had a surgery, and the surgery solved the problem. This was a couple of years ago, but he had I think it was a scar tissue issue that it eventually they had to go back in and do the surgery again. And that helped precipitate kind of his – I mean, he retired because of a different issue, but – he was struggling to stay healthy and stay on the ice the last couple of years of his NHL career. So the notion that you would suggest this and do this to one of the most valuable players, in fact, the MVP from 2 years ago in the league, is completely absurd. And again, I don't really understand where this is coming from. From the standpoint of this is completely below board, that the surgery wasn't needed, that this was all some kind of orchestration by Lightning management so that they would be cap compliant, or that in fact he did need the surgery, but the Lightning are fudging the fact that the recovery is going to be 4 to 5 months. And that was where Eric relied on a comment from Mike Johnson, who's an analyst now up in Canada, but he actually played for the Lightning and Eric knows him. And he said he had this surgery and it did take him that long. And it's possible to be on the ice skating and not be cleared to play. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it just does not make any sense. And I guess you can answer this in terms of where your friends from Pittsburgh are coming, or at least the people that you know in the media in Pittsburgh. Like, what is the implication here? That Kucherov didn't need the surgery, that he did need the surgery.
You know what the implication
is? It's not going to be a 4 to 5 month recovery. And I'm going to get to the part of this that I think is a legitimate question in a second here. But the notion that the Lightning forced this player to have a surgery so they could be cap compliant is absurd. It is absolutely absurd.
The issue is, Dave, and it's an emotional response, because the Lightning, a lot of people are going to come into this and they're going to say the Lightning had cap issues. They're keeping this team together because they were able to get away with the rule by putting arguably their best player on long-term IR and reap the rewards once he comes back. And I think it's completely legitimate what the Lightning did. I mean, this is something that I think these people who are emotional about it and are getting on the Lightning for using the system to their advantage, even though it was totally warranted, because he needed surgery on his hip, for goodness sake. There was a recovery period. I think, Dave, honestly, it's people who are bitter for whatever reason. And let this be a lesson to all the broadcasters and journalists out there. When you're covering a team, take the emotion out. You cannot be a cheerleader in this particular instance. If you're covering a team and you see another team kind of get away with using the system to their advantage, don't be bitter about the team that's doing it.
But
report,
Greg,
it accurately.
Here's even where I guess I take exception with how you're framing it. I don't think the Lightning are taking advantage of anything. We are operating with the benefit of 2020 hindsight from the first half of the season. Who would have thought when it was announced that Kucherov would miss the entire regular season that the Lightning would be off to their best start in franchise history? Who would have thought when it was announced that Kucherov would miss the entire regular season that the Dallas Stars, Columbus Blue Jackets, and Nashville Predators would have, to varying degrees, gotten off to a worse start than probably a lot of people expected? I don't know how many of these people would be singing the exact same tune if the Lightning were in fourth place, hovering a couple of points above the playoff cut line, which, had they not played as well as they have at the start of the year and had some other teams played better, maybe more to what was expected of them, certainly could be the case. There was no guarantee when we started this regular season that the Lightning would even make the playoffs. I know for people say, they're the defending Stanley Cup champs. They're a great team. They're going to make the playoffs. There are no guarantees. And you pull Nikita Kucherov out of the lineup, you are rolling the dice as to whether or not you're going to make the playoffs.
That argument, Dave, I think gets dampened down a little bit just because we've seen what they did during the hardest time of the year without Steven Stamkos. Not the same player, obviously, but you understand the point. I mean, I don't think anybody thought they were not going to make the playoffs.
But I think the Lightning didn't all right, so let's go along with this conspiracy theory, okay? The Lightning are thinking, how are we going to get cap compliant? Okay. Kucherov needs the surgery, or maybe he doesn't need the surgery. We're going to force him to have the surgery. I don't even know how people are connecting the dots here. Let's get him this surgery. We can be cap compliant for the regular season. We make the playoffs, and bingo, he's able to come back for the playoffs, and we're able to stick handle through this sticky cap situation during the regular season. I don't think Julian Brisebois or John Cooper felt that it was a slam dunk that they were going to make the playoffs. They are not taking that for granted. And in fact, had the Lightning, let's say the Lightning, through what did they play, 26 games? Let's say they'd gotten four fewer wins, which is not an extraordinary amount. Let's take 8 points off their total right now. And let's give some of those points to Columbus and Dallas and see how the standings look. All I'm saying is that if you are going to go into this with your eyes wide open about trying to take advantage of the system, to use your words, and I know where you were going with that, but you can't be assured that you are going to get to the point where you can have Kucherov back and available and play in the playoffs for you, because making the playoffs is not a guarantee. The Lightning found that out in 16-17. A year, by the way, in which Steven Stamkos played 17 games and missed the rest of the regular season. And guess what happened? They missed the playoffs after they'd gotten to the conference final the year before and the Stanley Cup final the year before that. That's the other part of it that I think is easy to overlook based on where they are in the standings right now with 40 points, one of the top points percentages in the NHL. In fact, maybe the number one points percentage. That's a credit to the players who have gone out there and played this year. But none of this was guaranteed back on January 13th when they started the regular season.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, nothing's guaranteed. I mean, I think we understand that. I mean, I personally felt like this was a playoff team. But that's
and maybe you feel differently about this, and I respect that, and that and that's fine.
All I'm saying is I think as long as the rules are in place where you can use long-term IR, people shouldn't be complaining. They just,
I mean,
because
do people
other
think
teams
that,
have done it.
Do people think that Mitchell Stevens' injury was not legit?
I don't know.
Do they think that?
I mean,
well, I mean, because he's on long-term injury. Are the Lightning working, quote unquote, working the system because they put Mitchell Stevens on long-term injury?
I think this is all stemming from the fact that it's arguably the top offensive player in the league, Nikita Kucherov, and somehow the Tampa Bay Lightning, whatever way they phrase it, Dave, because I think it changes day by day, they were able to, I don't even say what I want to rig the system because they made him have surgery. I mean, I think it's bizarre.
That's the part that kind of got me. Bottom line is,
he needed surgery.
He needed the surgery.
They tried I don't want to say a rehab approach, but you know, maybe to avoid surgery, they tried that. And the reality is, people who've had this type of surgery, it's the same time frame that Nikita Kucherov is going to be on. So it is very common,
but it is not an uncommon surgery for a hockey player.
No.
Brayden Point had it on both hips. Yanni Gord had it. We just said Mike Johnson had it.
And here's the other thing, too. These people that are being short-sighted, I don't know how Kucherov's going to be when he comes back.
Yeah.
I mean, he may feel great, but it may take him till the following year to get back to where he is being a productive player. So I think a lot of this, honestly, is just, there's some jealousy involved, and that's a scary thing. If you're a reporter, you have to take some of that emotion out and look, like, why couldn't that person who got into this with Eric, because I feel like it was one person who tweeted something out, why not just reach out to Eric or do a little research on your own and ask some questions before you make an unintelligent argument that doesn't make a lot of sense?
All right, so here is the second part of it, which maybe is folded into this a little bit, and maybe this is to try and give some of these people the benefit of the doubt, which I don't think you're inclined to do. No. But maybe if I do that, that makes a little bit more sense as to why people are up in arms. And it's not so much that he had the surgery, whether he needed the surgery. He had the surgery. Okay, he is on long-term injury. The second part of this is, we have said, what would the Lightning do to get Kucherov ready for the playoffs? Is playoff game number one going to be his first game? Are they able to play him a couple of games in the regular season? We have asked that question hypothetically because we don't know the answer, both in terms of his recovery timetable and whether the Lightning could make it work under the cap. That is the second part of this, which I think is a fair point and a question that we don't know the answer to.
I think for Lightning fans, and if they want to weigh in on this, they can at Bolts Radio, just to put a bow on this, and then we can move on to something else. I think, and you pointed it out, I think the bigger question is, what will Kucherov's play look like when he comes back? Who's he going to play with? My inclination is, assuming that he's as healthy as you can possibly be coming off that surgery, and his conditioning is as good as it's going to be, considering what he had to go through, that it's not going to take too long for John Cooper to put him back with his regular line mates and to be on the first power play. Because I think eventually you throw him in there to see what he can do. That might not be the case. They could, Dave. They could have him play with somebody else, maybe on a third or fourth line to get his feet wet. Maybe they ease him back into the power play. I think all that is very fair to bring up. My inclination, though, is if he's ready to go, if he's feeling healthy, maybe they manage his minutes a bit, but I get the sense, look, they're going to throw him right in there and play with his regular mates, whoever that may be, because we know John Cooper has been mixing and matching to a lot of success here recently with the lines.
And that is a question that we do not yet have the answer to, and some of it is tied also to what you brought up. What if his recovery takes longer?
Yeah.
So what if he's not ready by game one of the playoffs and you're into a playoff series and let's say it's game five and it's 2-2. You want Kucherov back in, but how are you using him? It's not game one. It's a 2-2 series. It's game five. You're getting a jolt of energy like the Lightning did when Stamkos came in. But how are you utilizing him in his first game back?
All fair points.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. Hit us up on Twitter at Bolts Radio. get some of your questions in. How do you divvy up the minutes moving forward with the schedule being pretty condensed? Alex Killorn talked about this the other day, and he said something to the extent that this whole schedule has been crazy, and you know, we just have to adjust. But I'm curious how the coaching staff looks at the minutes for certain players, and what will the lineup be moving forward? 11-7, 12-6. Do they need to go out and get a depth piece on the back end? Julien Brisebois mentioned how restricted they are with trades, but taking a lot of questions and comments from some of you out there, we'll get to in our next segment. We'll discuss that as well. So we've got a game this afternoon. Locally, it's going to be heard on 95.3 WDAE and, of course, Lightning Power Play. And it'll all start at 3 o'clock with Brian Burns and Kaylee Chelios. He's Dave Michigan. I am Greg Linnelli. Back after this on Lightning Power Play.
This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play on the iHeartRadio app.
I'm going to get to your questions here in just a bit, but boy, oh boy, Dave, you look at the standings right now, and I think you know my feeling in general about the standings. I think when there's this much parity, I don't really get caught up in you've got to finish first, you got to finish second. I mean, I think we all understand this is a pretty talented Lightning team, and they're pretty strong mentally. And, you know, if they were to finish fourth or if they were to finish first, I think you'd be hard-pressed to look at a better team than them in the playoffs. That being said, you know their goal is to win the division. I mean, every coach will tell you that. I think the players, that's something they strive for. Whether that happens, you know, that remains to be seen. But the start the Lightning have been on is impressive. And, you know, coming off a championship, we've gone into that before, the best points percentage in the National Hockey League. Now, they've played one more game than Tampa Bay. But the Carolina Hurricanes have won 8 in a row. And they're in first place, 8-2 in their last 10. You and I have had this conversation. I think out of all the teams in this division, I think Carolina's the one that you could look at and say they would be tough to handle in a 7-game series. Not saying the Lightning wouldn't come out and win. I mean, I think we both feel that they would, although it'd be a dogfight. But Carolina, to their credit, I mean, this is turning into be like a 3-team race in the Discover Central with Carolina, Tampa Bay, and Florida. Chicago's got 33 points. They're in fourth. And then there's Columbus, who's got 29 points through 30 games. They're in fifth. But the top three teams, at least in this division, I think they've been better than most people anticipated before the season began.
Yeah, I saw a stat last night after Carolina had won that the top three teams points percentage-wise in the entire league are those three teams, and I'm just confirming that right now they are. So the Lightning do have the top points percentage in the NHL, slightly ahead of Carolina because the Hurricanes have played one more game. So even though the Hurricanes have one more point than the Lightning, when you factor in the percentage of points per games played, the Lightning come out slightly ahead. So what do we make of this? What is the value of finishing as high as you can other than just pride and wanting to feel good going into the playoffs, I suppose? So we don't know if this is going to be a 3-team race in the second half of the year, but certainly in the first half of the year, these teams are separated by the narrowest of margins. 41 points for Carolina, 40 each for the Lightning and Panthers. Lightning and Panthers still have 5 games left against each other. The Lightning and Hurricanes have 3 games left against each other. I want to say the Hurricanes and Panthers have played 4 at this point. I think 2 in each building. And the Hurricanes have won 3 of those 4. So if you can avoid third, so again, I'm not crazy about looking into the future and having a crystal ball, but the way things look right now, it does appear that these three teams are going to finish 1, 2, and 3 in the division, barring a significant slump for one or both of them and a significant surge by one of the teams behind them, whether it's the Blackhawks or one of the teams in the bottom 4 in the division. So let's just go with the assumption that these three teams are going to finish 1, 2, 3 in some kind of order. The advantage of avoiding third would be that you get home ice advantage, at least in the first round. And if you can win that first round series and you finish first, you will have it in the second round as well. The advantage of finishing first would be that you do not have to face either Carolina or Florida if you're the Lightning.
Right.
So if you feel that the team that finishes first will get past its opponent, then that team will only have to play one series against the other two. If you finish second or third, and the team that finishes first does get to the second round, then if you're going to come out of the division, you need to beat the other two teams in two separate playoff series. Having said all of that, that's still a lot of hypothetical conversation. We saw in 2019, most people expected that the Lightning would get out of the first round, certainly, and they didn't against Columbus. So in the playoffs, you are starting fresh, and you may lose in the first round. So just because you may finish first in the division doesn't mean that you have an easier path to the conference final. You may run into a team that knocks you off in the first round, the team that finished fourth. So we don't know. But if we're gonna frame the rest of the regular season, at least from the context of these three teams are in a race to finish as high as they can, which is kind of what you just said, what are the advantages? The advantages would be home ice, at least in the first round, maybe in the first two. And by finishing first, theoretically, you would only have to play one of those other two teams, not both of them.
It's a fair point, and it speaks to how good I think this division has been and will be, and we'll kind of wait to see how this plays out with the Lightning and their busy schedule coming up as well.
Dave, yeah, that's something else we haven't even talked about. 5 games in 7 days. You would never see that in a typical regular season.
No. And I've told you, one of the concerns I have is, you know, it's not so much COVID anymore for these guys. It is the amount of wear and tear on their body. And, you know, not to get back on the Kucherov situation, but even more so with him. I mean, could you imagine a guy playing with a shaky hip who was like, you know, I want to give it a shot during the regular season here in this type of schedule where you're playing multiple games a week? I mean, that's a lot of wear and tear on anybody, let alone somebody who maybe has a nagging injury. And I think when you look at the players, Dave, and the rest and how physical the game is today, it almost is going to be whoever survives this schedule in the regular season in terms of being able to compete in the postseason to the best of their abilities. It's almost how you handle the regular season may set you up for how well you do in the playoffs. And, you know, I still think talent usually wins out during a championship run. But it might also be even more so this year, who's the most healthy? And who is managing the minutes of their best players the best in a really condensed schedule? And that's one of the questions we're asking. And Al weighs in, Dave. He wants to know your thoughts on staying 11-7 using Borgman to give 27-77 fewer minutes. I think that's going to be an interesting situation. How do you manage the minutes of your best players? Because you understand you can't bench multiple guys a night. It's just the roster's not built that way like it is in the NFL. So you need to look at guys and say, okay, maybe I give Hedman a rest here. Maybe it's McDonough here. But most likely, maybe it's just saying, look, maybe Hedman's getting 15 minutes a night towards the end of the year compared to 25, which is what he's hitting right now. Easier said than done, Dave, as we know these guys want to play. But to me, how you manage the minutes, particularly of your top players, is going to be one of those sneaky deciding factors for teams as they head into the playoffs.
So the Lightning went with 11-7 on Saturday. And while we didn't actually get any kind of explanation as to why, and it's something they've done before earlier this year. In fact, I was texting with Pete Weber, who does the radio play-by-play for the Predators, and I usually am touching base with the other team's broadcasters on the day of a game, and particularly as we get into the warm-ups, because they don't have access. When the games are at Amalie Arena, they don't have access to see the warm-up, so I can let them know what the lines look like, etc. And I said, looks like the Lightning going with 11-7, something they've done this year. And he texted back and he said, yeah, we saw that earlier this year. I didn't remember that. He would, because, you know, the games that he's seeing the Lightning are, you know, a small number. So he would remember if the Lightning went 11-7. I suppose I could have gone back and looked at the lineup chart when it became clear. We didn't really know that they were going 11-7 until we saw the warmups. Remember, there was a little bit of a miscommunication, if that's the right word, where Eric asked John Cooper about Taylor Radish's NHL debut in the press conference, and Coop said, yeah, you might want to check your information on that. So Radish was taking the line rushes on the fourth line, but he wasn't in because the fourth line only had Joseph and Maroon, and Luke Shen came back in. So some of it might have been a matchup situation, and the fact that they used 11-7 earlier this year against Nashville and had success maybe factored in. I also think they wanted to get Luke back into a game. He hadn't played in the last three. He played almost 10 minutes in that game. And the fact that the Lightning had a lead, I know it became 4-3 in the third. You could see how the minute distribution was more even. Like, Hedman was not up around 27, 28 minutes like in some other games recently. He, I think, finished with about 21 and a half minutes or so in that game. But I don't know that the Lightning are going to go 11-7 just like indefinitely moving forward here. And if they go 11-7, it may be that Luke Shen is the seventh defenseman, not Borgman, assuming all the other guys are healthy. We discussed this on Friday, Greg, where you brought up about sitting guys out down the stretch in the regular season to make sure that they are ready for the playoffs. And I said, you may not be able to do that based on the salary cap and the cap restrictions. And if you try and limit guys' minutes, they may push back. Now, that may not result in them playing more, but as Derek Lalonde told us, when Victor Hedman didn't want to come off the ice on the penalty kill,
what are you going to do?
They had, right, like he's like, no, it's 4-3. We're up by a goal. We're killing a penalty. McDonough's in the box. I'm staying out here. Or I'm okay to stay out here, and they said, all right. Having said that, yeah, I mean, they could play Victor Hedman 17, 18 minutes, and it's not like Hedman is pushing back when the Lightning have a 6-1 lead in the third period. Those have been the games usually where his minutes are lower, as you would expect. He doesn't need to play as much. That is something they could do, but you're still having the player suit up and play. And I guess what I'm curious to see, and this ties into the point about where you're going to finish in the standings, because the one position where they can do this is goaltending. They could play Vasilevsky less down the stretch in the regular season than they would, let's say they were battling for a playoff spot, and we certainly hope that nothing happens that they're in that position. But let's assume for the sake of this argument that it's still kind of a three-team race. The question is, where the Lightning finish? First, second, or third? And they're well on their way to make the playoffs. Do you play Vasilevsky less, understanding that maybe you're going to sacrifice some points and potentially first place, maybe? Or, and understanding that we want him fresher for the playoffs, because it is a busy schedule down the stretch in the regular season. Or do you play him at the same clip that you have been playing him? And you say, Andrei Vasilevsky is 26 years old. You know, he loves to play. He played every minute in the bubble last year. He's fine. And we're just going to play every game to do as well as we can to give our team the best opportunity to win. And we're going to try and finish as high as we can. And we don't have the answer to that question yet. I know I've been saying that a lot.
No, we don't.
Because I don't know what April and May are going to look like. Well, but I think that's a fair trend line to examine. What will McElhinney's workload be into April and May beyond the obvious starts and back-to-backs, or maybe kind of what he's been doing to this point, which is one start every week to 8 or 9 days, typically one start every four. Will that workload increase because of the point that you just made, that the Lightning know that the playoffs are what matters and they feel that it's imperative to help with their success in the playoffs to have Vasilevsky play less relative to what he has played so far down the stretch in the regular season, even if that means that they may fall into a situation where they are going to have to go through potentially Florida and Carolina in the first two rounds.
As you've heard me say, you know, this the playoffs, hardest championship to win, and you're going to have to beat good teams regardless. And I understand what you're saying, that perhaps you're that number one seed. You can avoid having a really tough gauntlet of teams compared to finishing second or third. All of that is on the table. But I think this group is mature enough, Dave, and they've been through a lot of adversity over the last year, where wherever they finish, I think they're going to be mentally sharp. And I do think there's a switch they can turn on, even more so than what we're seeing right now, where they just lock it down and they become the team that we saw during that bubble. Maybe that's a little wishful thinking on my part. I am projecting, no doubt, but I think I'm willing to give a team who won the cup in those conditions last year the benefit of the doubt if they don't finish in first place and they choose the route of resting some players in the regular season to gear up for a postseason run. Specifically to Al's question, I want to get back to Curtis McAlena because I feel Kucherov debate that we saw over the last couple of days with his health, the McAlena situation has been brewing now for some people on Twitter regarding whether or not the Lightning need to address the backups goaltender situation. You and I have talked about this before. Does Vasi play more starts? Because in some people's eyes, Curtis McAlena hasn't been as great. I want to get to that momentarily, but to Al's point specifically, Dave, about going 11-7 or 12-6, but I think for me, using Borgman a little bit more is fascinating because I do think in a perfect world, which we don't live in, I understand that the cap restrictions are going to prevent Tampa Bay from, I think, doing anything major, although I think they can make a deal. It's just going to have to be, as Julian Brisebois said, basically exchanging salaries. But, you know, you're not talking about a top six or top seven defenseman. You're probably just looking to add a little bit more depth because, let's face it, if Luke Shen were to get claimed on waivers, and so far he hasn't, but let's just say for the sake of this discussion that when they want to put him back on the taxi squad next time that he does get claimed, you're all of a sudden very thin back there. And Julian Brisebois knows this. I'm not telling you anything new, but it is something to at least bring up. And that perhaps seeing Borgman a little bit more than we've seen previously will be beneficial to this team once the playoffs begin, Dave. Because as we know, you're going to have to use multiple defensemen after your top six during a championship run. It happened during Tampa Bay's first championship run. It happened during Tampa Bay's second championship run. What's the old saying? You need at least eight or nine quality defensemen to get through the playoffs. So I would like to see Borgman, just for the sake of understanding what he can and can't do. It's nice to sit there and say, you know, he's done really well in practice. We feel comfortable with him. But it's another thing to sit there and say, well, can he do it in the second round of the playoffs when Tampa Bay's trailing 2-1 and he's got to play 12 to 14 minutes? So I think in a perfect world, I want to see Borgman a little bit more. I know what Shen can do, and he fills a role very well. But that is the one position they're a bit thin at right now. And so if Borgman moves ahead of Shen on the depth chart, so be it. And that also means that maybe it pushes Julian to get a little creative at the trade deadline to bring in a depth defenseman, because let's say he doesn't feel completely comfortable with who's backing up his top six. So I think it gives you a little bit better idea of what Borgman can do. At the same time, evaluating collectively your defensive core and whether or not you really do need to add a depth piece, because, you know, it's pretty thin to begin with. So I don't know where you stand on Borgman specifically, but if they can, I'd like to see his minutes and his game time, his games played, increase. And then I think you can make a fair evaluation of where you are collectively. And then if you have to be creative, Dave, and dangle one of the younger players we've seen come up this year to get a depth piece, you know, salary in, salary out, then maybe that becomes a little easier to do after you've had a couple of weeks here to evaluate the back end for your team depth-wise.
Julian Brisebois did say that organizationally, the Lightning feel good about the eight defensemen they have. going into the playoffs. He also said that it was, quote unquote, unlikely that they would be able to make a move at the deadline for the reasons you just spelled out. It has to be dollars out for dollars in. Luke Shen would have to go on waivers to go to the taxi squad, but he has cleared waivers twice.
He has
already this year, and he is currently still in the window of the second waiver clear. So when you clear waivers, it's not like if you go up, you have to clear waivers again when you go down 3 days later, if that's when the team would be sending you back down. Once you clear waivers, that waiver, you become waiver exempt, basically, for either 30 days or 10 games played. So the Lightning are still in that window. And one of the parts of the conversation that Eric and I had the other day, beyond the Kucherov story, but it was related to this discussion that we have had with him and amongst ourselves about, like, how can the Lightning use taxi squad guys when they are this tight to the cap? And Eric pointed out that when Alex Volkov is not in the lineup, he is a healthy scratch still on the NHL roster. He does not go to the taxi squad because he would have to clear waivers. And to this point, the Lightning have not put him through waivers. Obviously, he would be eligible to be claimed if he were to go through waivers, and the Lightning have not done that. But if they were to play, let's just use Ross Colton as an example. Ross Colton can come up from the taxi squad, and they can put Luke Shen on the taxi squad now that he has cleared waivers. So that is essentially an even swap in terms of salary hit, because Luke Shen's cap hit gets completely absorbed when he goes to the taxi squad because of his salary. You have to make over $1 million. If you make over $1 million and you were sent to the minors or to the taxi squad in this case, only the first $1 million, it's like $1,050,000. It's just over $1 million, I believe.
Right.
That is the only part that comes off the cap. So if a player makes $3 million and he's sent to the minors, the first million does not count against the cap, but the next two do. Luke Shen does not make more than $1 million. So when he goes to the taxi squad, his cap hit goes to zero. Same as Ross Colton. When he goes to the taxi squad or the minors, his cap hit is zero. So you can, I'm just using Colton as an example, but like this is what Eric said. As long as you're swapping player for player, it's not going to affect your overall cap number, which is why we've seen this rotation. As long as Luke Shen is able to go to the taxi squad, and if you're going to send him to the taxi squad, then you are, every 30 days or 10 games played, going to have to put him through waivers. Same with Borgman, because Borgman is no longer waiver exempt either. But in the immediate future, they could do that. I'm assuming Borgman went back through waivers. We didn't get a press release on that, but he's back in the taxi squad. So I'm guessing that because it had been more than 30 days from the start of the season when he went on the taxi squad initially, that he now has this 30-day window going back to whenever he cleared waivers. So I'm not talking about May or late April, but within this busy stretch over the next couple of weeks, let's say, the Lightning do have flexibility to play Borgman more or one of these other guys, whether it's Radish or if Barry Boulay comes back up or Colton or Jamel Smith, because Eric clarified this for me, as long as whether it's a Luke Shen or a Borgman or whoever is going to the taxi squad, you need to send a player to the taxi squad if you're going to bring a player up from the taxi squad so the dollars even out. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So I think to Al's point, we could see Borgman more, and I wouldn't be surprised if we do, so he gets more game reps under his belt, because you're right, it's very possible the Lightning might need him down the stretch and into the playoffs. But if that is going to happen, that means it has to be Borgman up for somebody else going to the taxi squad. And at least right now, the Lightning have the flexibility to do just that.
A lot of hurdles have to be made, and you have to understand your cap. But, you know, Al, to answer your question, yes, I think Borgman is somebody we both would like to see a bit more. I think for the Lightning's sake, to give them a little bit more security back there, assuming they can. And, you know, monitoring the minutes of McDonough and Hedman, I think easier said than done. In a perfect world, yes, you'd like to see that happen.
But they may, you know what, Greg, they may do that. The other part of Julian's press conference that I didn't talk about, and I went back and listened to it again, and he said this, and I said, you know, I should have brought it up. He actually said verbatim, I'm quoting here, rest is a weapon. Mm-hmm. Like, he is prioritizing rest, which ties in nicely to your statement about, are you going to hold guys out? Again, maybe they'll be able to do that, and you can actually not dress Victor Hedman. And, you know, you're not going to put Hedman through waivers. Maybe there's a way to have him be a healthy scratch, and it's not going to really affect your cap hit, and I guess that it's possible they're able to do that. Maybe we will see that, or maybe they will say to Victor, you know what, we're not worried so much about finishing as high as we can in the standings. If we win tonight without you in the lineup or you playing as much, great. But it's more important for us. You're going to play.
Yeah.
We're going to keep your minutes in the 15 to 16 range. And we're going to make sure you get out there on power play. But we're going to try and limit your hard minutes in this particular game. Maybe they do that. I don't know. I haven't seen it often. I got to be honest.
Sure.
You know, in past years, it doesn't happen a lot at the NHL level, but this is a very unusual year. And with the canceled games that have been rescheduled, leading to an even more condensed schedule in the regular season, I think we kind of have to be ready for some things that we haven't seen before in a more typical regular season.
Well, it's going to be fun again this afternoon at 4 o'clock. It's going to be the Lightning looking to continue their good play of late, and we'll see how it plays out against Nashville. The 95.3 WDA locally is where we'll be if you want to tune in. Of course, listen to Lightning Power Play. Festivities will start at 3 o'clock on RN, pregame at 3:30. Then at 4 o'clock, the game call, Dave Mishkin and the Hall of Famer, Phil Esposito. Dave, great job as always. I'll see you in a couple hours.
Yeah, see you in a couple hours.
Yeah, should be fun. I'm Greg Linnelli. Thanks to Steve Versnick as well. Thanks to you for listening and participating. We always appreciate it. We'll be back at it again tomorrow with a new edition of Power Lunch, noon to 1 on Lightning Power Play.